Welcome to The Prep Room, the official podcast of NBE Wizard. Focused, strategic, NBE ready. I'm Cody Walker, funeral director, embalmer, educator, and I'm here to help you cut through the noise and prepare to get NBE ready. Let's do it. Welcome to the next episode of The Prep Room. As I promised, we're always going to have interesting and awesome guests, and we have another awesome guest today. Dr. Doug Snyder, welcome to the prep room.
Hey, Cody. Thanks for having me.
Glad you're here. As I said in the beginning, we will normally have funeral directors and embalmers, but there are other professionals that can be very beneficial to this journey. And Dr. Snyder is one of those professionals. So welcome to the prep room. Tell everybody a little bit about yourself. What is your specialty?
Sure. So like you said, my name is Doug Snyder. I am an emergency medicine doctor. I practice community emergency medicine just outside of Raleigh, North Carolina. I have a beautiful wife. I'm a girl dad. I have a 4-year-old, 2-year-old, and an 8-week-old. So my house is a little chaotic right now. Someone is always crying. But the way that we connected is the other role and hat that I wear is I'm the co-founder and CEO of QBank.com. So we specialize in question bank learning. And so we are thrilled to have MBE Wizard as a partner on our platform.
And we are thrilled to be on your platform. We were looking for a platform just like this. We didn't even know QBank existed when we found it. And it was like perfect, perfect fit. So it's exactly what we're looking for. Okay, 4, 2, and 8 weeks. And they're all girls.
Yes.
Wow. That's awesome. That's awesome. Congratulations on the baby. So you've got none of them started school this week. We're starting school here in Texas. None of them started school. That'll be coming next year, I guess.
That's right. They do preschool.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you're emergency medicine physician practicing in North Carolina. How did you get to what is QBank, first of all?
Mm-hmm. So QBank is an all-in-one question bank platform. And we specialize in question bank learning. And so a question bank, which we call a QBank for short, which is how we got our domain name, is a digital curated library of practice test questions that is aligned to a curriculum or blueprint of an actual exam like the MBE. And it all started kind of through my whole educational journey of how many practice or how many, you know, standardized exams that I had to take to get to be an emergency physician. And it was a lot of personal aha moments of, you know, how do I learn best? And then kind of the business, I have a lot of love for business and entrepreneurship, and that kind of everything kind of came together perfectly probably 5 or 6 years ago. And we just started building out our platform.
Great. So you weren't busy enough as a doctor. You had to take on something else.
That's right.
One thing you mentioned in there is you took a lot of high stakes tests or high stakes exams. Take us through your education a little bit. What have you done in the way of education?
Yeah, so I obviously haven't taken the MBE, but like you said, I've taken many high stakes standardized exams. In undergrad, I took the GRE and the MCAT. In medical school and residency, there is a series of exams called the United States Medical Licensing Exams. There's 4 different exams that you take with that, and that's over a course of 3 or 4 years. And then most recently, probably 5 or 6 years ago, I took the American Board of Emergency Medicine Certification Exam, and that has an oral component and a multiple choice written component. And so, yeah, you might be thinking, man, this guy, he must be naturally good at standardized exams. But let me tell you and reassure you that that's definitely not the case. And I'm happy to be vulnerable on your podcast, but I truly struggled with the MCAT. So one of the first standardized exams that I took. And so it actually took me 3 attempts on that test before I had a good enough score to get into medical school. And that delay, or how many times it took me to take that test and pass that test, it delayed my medical school admission by a year. So I can really relate to any of your NBE audience who's retaking the exam and all the feelings that they are experiencing, the frustration. They must be scared, embarrassed, depressed. But those are just very normal feelings that someone experiences when they have to retake a standardized exam.
Yes. And to all those out there listening that are in that situation, whether you're taking it second time or the 10th time, you're not alone. There are others out there, and don't feel bad about it. You can't, like I've said before, so what, now what? You can't dwell on what has been. Just got to make this your last attempt, because you can pass it this time. But exactly. What did you find with the MCAT that made you successful after your struggles?
Yeah, I think not passing the MCAT was actually a blessing, because it forced me to self-reflect and try to understand why I didn't pass. And that ultimately helped me be more focused, more organized, and really made me figure out how I learned best. And so it really came down to, personally, it was, I didn't like to study things I didn't like. And so I spent my time disproportionately on the science sections of the MCAT that I understood. And I did not do well on the verbal reasoning section, of all things, on two of the exams to actually score a minimum above what most medical students or schools require. So I winged part of it. That's what really came down to.
We say that a lot in mortuary school too, because students will struggle on some of the courses, especially if they have a big interest in embalming. They'll struggle in the courses like, small business, religious rights, things of that nature. But then they really excel in the science classes, embalming classes, restorative art. And it's just because that's where that natural interest is, I think. And it can make those other classes hard.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. I mean, to give, again, more reassurance to those retaking it, again, it was a blessing that I scored poorly on the MCAT the first two times. And that's how I look at it now. And it's had no negative impact on my career. In fact, when I'm saving someone's life in the emergency department, they're like, "Hey, Dr. Snyder, what was your first and second score on the MCAT?" Nobody ever says that, right? If you're struggling to pass it, you can do it. And once you actually pass the MBE, nobody's going to care, and nobody's going to ask you how many times it actually took you to pass the MBE. Families will really only care that you're competent, that you listen, and that they're treated with kindness and respect.
Yes, that's exactly right. The only one that may ask you how many times it took is if you want to come on the podcast here and we talk, I may ask you just for the benefit of others. But in a job or anything like that, they're not going to ask. Doug, what that reminded me of was back in the 80s when President Reagan got shot and the surgeon was about to operate on him, and he asked the surgeon, "Are you a Republican or a Democrat?" And I think he replied something like, "Mr. President, we're all Republicans today." That's what it reminded me of when you said that. You're exactly right. It is, you just got to keep moving forward. That's one of the things we say here on the show, just keep moving forward. So how did you feel when you passed the MCAT that third time?
Oh, it was the best feeling. I remember logging in and just seeing that score, and it was such a relief.
Yeah, for sure.
And it was a culmination. Like, immediately you're just like, I am so glad I spent all that time studying. I'm so glad I was so organized. All your effort had paid off.
Sure, for sure. For our students, they spend a lot of time in science. We have microbiology and pathology and, like I said, restorative art and embalming, a lot of anatomy. And a lot of times students, talk about medical school, even though we haven't been in medical school. Can you kind of take us through like a typical day or quarter or semester of medical school? What was it like?
Oh, it was busy. It just depends on what semester you're in, obviously, but it was almost all the same courses. The first 2 years are all the sciences behind medicine, and then the second 2 years are all your clinical rotations. And so most days had anywhere from 4 to 5 hours of classes, and then the rest of your time was spent reviewing notes, studying with colleagues, and just preparing for whatever small exam was probably upcoming that week.
Sure. And with those, especially those classes like pathology and microbiology, those are really heavy in terminology, I feel. And it's a lot of times terminology that our students are not as familiar with coming into it. Do you have any thoughts or tips on remembering all that terminology and help cementing it in the memory for exams and such?
Yeah, I think it's all just repetition. It's seeing the word multiple times.
For sure. I agree completely. So as you went through medical school and then your subsequent exams after that, what was some of the, you were already so busy in school and then preparing for the bigger exams. What are some of the strategies you used in preparing for those larger exams, higher stakes exams?
Yeah, there's a few practical bits of advice I could give. One is to start studying early. One of the biggest mistakes people make is to wait and cram for an exam. And our brains actually learn best when you give it a little time to forget and then revisit the material. And that's actually called spaced repetition. And so if you start early, you can keep circling back to your weaker areas, keeping that information fresh and just strengthening long-term retention. Another point I'd make is what I didn't do well on with the MCAT was make sure that you're studying in proportion to what's on the exam. All exams, including the MBE, publish a blueprint that shows you the different topics and what percent of questions will fall within each topic. And so not every topic is tested equally, so you don't have to give each topic equal time. Looking at the exam blueprint and putting your effort where it counts will take you pretty far.
Absolutely. And for those who are retaking it, when they weren't successful the first time, they're provided a sheet at the end of printout showing what areas they were stronger in, what areas they were weaker in. So that can help also by focusing on those areas that one was weakest in. Sure.
Definitely. And then I think the last piece would be just practice active recall with real questions. Reading notes is great. Watching lectures is great. Doing modules is great. But a lot of that is just passive learning. And then so to actually have to commit to an answer or think of an answer and pull it out of memory, that's active recall, and that's where real learning sticks.
Something you were talking about there was spaced repetition. So that's with everyone. That's just the way the brain works. It needs that time to learn and forget a little. So it's not unique to any one person. I know everyone may think that they're unique or there's something wrong because they can't remember something, but that's actually physically a reason for that, correct?
Exactly. The more you see something, the more you'll know it.
Sure. So as you were preparing for your higher stakes exams while you were in medical school, what was it, the USMLE? Is that right?
Yeah, United States Medical Licensing Exam.
Yeah. So what were some of the things that you did in preparing for those, or how did you prepare?
Yeah, so I was pretty nervous, and it's talked up very highly that, you know, your MCAT score will translate to what your USMLE score will be. And so going into medical school, I was pretty nervous. You know, I had faith that I could do it, but I just had to retake the MCAT 3 times. And of course that's in the back of my mind. And so I looked at a lot of resources, and kind of the personal aha moment for me in my studying is when I found question bank learning in medical school. And that was a completely new concept for me, but it's not like I actually went out and found it. It was kind of just laid in my lap, because I had always just answered practice test questions, and I thought, oh, maybe I'll just do more of them. But all the practice test questions I took for the GRE and the MCAT were just given to me in a static manner. So that may have been at the end of a module or in the back of a book or through a full-length practice test that I took. But question bank learning is actually no secret study tool in medical school. It's actually the gold standard for exam preparation in medical school. And so everybody uses it. And some surveys I've come across say that more than 95% of medical students use question bank learning, but anecdotally, 100% of students will do it. So every one of my colleagues in medical school, residency, and even as an attending physician prepping for the emergency medicine boards, everybody uses question bank learning for high stakes exams. And the reason is question bank learning works. It's a smart, targeted, and efficient way to study using practice test questions. And as we alluded to earlier, it's all rooted in the cognitive science of how we learn.
You may have somebody say, well, aren't you just memorizing the questions and the answers, so you're not really learning it?
Absolutely not. So, part of answering a question is the retrieval-based portion of cognitive science. But where, and if that's all you did, that might be the case. But question bank learning is much more than that. Question bank learning has detailed explanations with every question. So as students get questions right or wrong, they're immediately reviewing that information. And so every wrong answer is an opportunity to actually solidify a learning point or master material. And then every explanation for a correct answer is just reinforcement. And then question bank learning actually tracks your progress over time. So you can actually study, you can actually find out your weaknesses based on topics, just like you mentioned the printout report after an NBE exam. You can actually pull in, questions from, exams that you scored incorrectly or from topics that you're poor on. And then you can start doing more like spaced repetition practice after that. So question bank learning is truly personalized to every student and not just a list of 10 questions that you're supposed to read, answer, and be done with.
So you came up with the whole idea of QBank. At what point in your education career did you develop QBank? And tell us how that got started.
Yeah. So that was kind of by accident. But I was sitting in one night, and when I was in residency, so that's when I was actually doing, rotations and training to be an emergency medicine doctor. And I was thinking back on my education and I just realized that I would have done so much better in high school with tough courses and AP courses. And I would have done so much better in undergrad with courses like anatomy and organic chemistry if I had question bank learning. And it almost made me frustrated. And I was like, why? I wonder why I didn't have question bank learning in all these other subjects. And the reason is no platform existed that enabled educators the ability to create a question bank. So I assembled a team of world-class developers. I bought the domain name qbank.com, and the rest has been history.
It's incredible. And it is a great product. For anyone that hasn't tried it, it is amazing. Part of the concept, you talked about learning from the questions, and those can be like explanations of the correct answer, also explanations of the incorrect answer. Are all those important to the concept of learning from the question banks?
Oh yeah, definitely. Very important. And to go into a little bit more of what a question bank is, as I mentioned, it's just a library of practice test questions. And so if you had that and it was printed on a piece of paper, it would not be a question bank. But what question bank learning is every question is categorized to a topic that's aligned to the curriculum or blueprint of an exam that the educator is actually trying to teach you. And so the topics, the difficulty, and the format of a question bank would ideally match what you're exactly going to see on test day. And that's how you've modeled your NBE Wizard question bank on QBank.com. And so, again, instead of studying with a list of practice test questions, you know, a question bank is dynamic and personalized to you based on the tests you take and your performance on the questions. So really, what's cool about question bank learning is the student feels like they have complete control over their education. They can study what they want, how they want, and when they want.
And talk about the analytics a little bit. So after someone takes a practice test, they see how they did. That helps them going forward on how they need to allocate their time, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. And so you can kind of, it's way cool. And so how it works from the beginning, and then I'll touch upon the analytics, is you get access via subscription to the question bank. And from there, you can build your own custom test for your own study purpose. And so how that works is you pick the topics that you want to study from, you choose how many questions you want to include on a test, and then you set a test mode that complements your study style or the time that you have allotted for that exact study session. So you can do a time test to mimic the actual MBE. You can do an untimed test where you take all your questions and then you see your explanations at the end, or it can be more of a relaxed mode where you go question by question. So students have not only control over the content that they're pulling in, but that exact study session and how they want to learn during that time. And so as you mentioned, right when you finish a test, you get your instant results with detailed explanations. So again, every wrong answer becomes a learning moment, and every right answer locks in your knowledge. And our system keeps track of your progress. So you get clear analytics on which topics you're performing well on and which topics need improvement. And so that way you can spot patterns, you can strengthen recall, and you can target those weak spots so that they don't cost you points on test day. Because the worst thing that you'd want to do is find out your weaknesses on the NBE report. You want to figure out your weaknesses, master those, overcome those before you actually take your NBE.
That's exactly right. Now, if you do pass the MBE, which you're going to next time you take it, if you're listening to this, when you do pass it, you don't know what your grade is. You don't know how good you did, but you know that you passed, and that's what's going to matter for sure. But we want to use those analytics to make sure you're focusing the adequate amount of time for whether it be funeral directing and arranging or restorative art or embalming or funeral service sciences. We want to make sure you're spending the right amount of time in those areas. And one thing you mentioned there, the study, I think it's the study mode is what it's called. I love that, where you see, you answer one question and then you hit submit and you automatically see if you got it right. And it shows those explanations of the correct answer and the incorrect answer. I think that can be extremely helpful for students.
Oh yeah. And if you have 5 minutes in between classes, you just take a quick study mode test. You can set it up in the morning, and then, you know, just 5 minutes can be beneficial to you.
Absolutely.
So while you're waiting in line at the grocery store or getting your coffee, you can make the most of it.
Sure. And it can all be done on your phone too, right? It goes to any screen.
Yep.
Yeah. It's awesome. Okay. We talked about study mode a little bit. What about when it's almost time, the day is almost here for you to take national board exam? Can you use the question bank learning to make sure you're ready for it?
Yeah.
To kind of give you that final assurance?
Yeah. And our goal is that, you know, question bank learning replaces the thought of, I hope I'm ready to take this exam, to, I know I'm ready the day you walk into that exam. And the reason that we know it's effective is because there's cognitive science behind the learning. And so when you're studying with a question bank, it might just feel like you're answering questions and checking answers, but behind the scenes, you're actually using one of the most powerful research-backed learning strategies from cognitive science without even realizing it. And I mentioned retrieval practice. And so retrieval practice is just actively pulling information from your memory. So every time you answer a question before looking at the solution, you're strengthening those mental pathways that make recall even easier. I've also mentioned some spaced repetition. It's also called spaced practice. But as you revisit questions over time, you're going to be strengthening, again, those long-term memory pathways. And question banks naturally encourage you to loop back to earlier material, which cements those long-term memory pathways. And so one cool thing about question bank learning is when you actually create a test and you pick which topics, when you actually filter down which questions are going to fall onto that exam, you could choose to only take questions that you scored incorrectly in the past. That's spaced repetition. That's reviewing material that you didn't understand from a previous exam. You can also retake the exact same exam, so you can go back through all the tests that you've taken and you can take ones that you scored poorly on, again, to attack your weaknesses and try to revisit that material and master the material. But it's all from just a database of questions that everybody has a different interaction with. One other thing that kind of, I think was my problem with the MCAT is I did a lot of just reading and then I took questions immediately. And so my brain was only focused on one topic and then I just took questions for that topic. Well, part of cognitive science is there's a point called interleaving. And so you're mixing questions from different topics instead of just studying one subject at a time in isolation. And that really forces your brain to switch gears, just like you'll have to do on test day.
That's exactly right. Because you may see one question about cremation and then the next one's about religious rites, you know, Jewish funeral customs. They do change. So you've got to be prepared for that.
Yeah.
Sure.
And then you mentioned kind of going through an explanation, and students can even take it one step further. There's a cognitive science point called elaboration. And so when you're actually reviewing a answer choice and explanation, you need to be asking yourself, why is this correct? Why are these other answer choices incorrect? And you do a great job explaining that throughout your question bank. But that just allows the students to connect things between topics, and that deeper processing makes knowledge stick.
Yeah, it's very important. Once you finish a test and you see your results, that's not the end of it. You've got to go back through those questions and look at the correct answer and explanations. That's the real key to success, I think, for sure. Mm-hmm. Now, there are other, I'm going to use this quote, question banks out there like Quizlet, things like that. What makes this different than, you know, questions you can find on Quizlet that people have put in there?
Yeah, a few things. One is that these are expertly curated by you on the MBE Wizard. And so there's a lot of reassurance from a student that you have taken the time to explore the breadth of the content, to map out those questions proportionally, and to spend the time actually putting in those detailed explanations. That's where Quizlet is going to fall short, because you don't know who really made those questions. And that's where just asking AI, like an AI engine, questions is going to be inadequate. Certainly, that's a great way to expand upon points that you might not understand. But question bank learning is cool because it's also super efficient and I think almost respectful to a student's time. They don't have to spend time reading an explanation on things they understand, but things that they don't understand, we help them identify that, and they can spend the time exactly where they need to make their study sessions more efficient.
A lot better than just opening a textbook and trying to flip through it and learn something from it today.
Yeah, exactly.
And a good example of that, and you can look on different websites and you can see a list of all the different textbooks that questions are written from. It's on the International Conference's website. And for example, one of the textbooks that's listed in there, and I'm sure most of y'all listening to this use the textbook in small business management. It's by Longnecker, I believe. I was trying to look at my shelf, but I can't remember the author. But only about half of that book is actually covered on the National Board Exam. So if you're going to try to use that whole book to study, you're studying, you know, twice as much as what you need to, because it's a general small business book. It's not, the whole book is not covered on the board exam. So using something like MBE Wizard can save you that time as well.
Yeah, and to compliment you, I think you really mapped out your questions well. I mean, I'm not an expert in your content, but you have over 600 questions for each of the funeral services, arts, and sciences. And just like you mentioned, you don't want to spend too much time doing, you know, things that won't help you. You don't want too many questions in your question bank, right? You could have thousands of questions, but that's not going to be as respectful to a student's time. Students want a start and an end. You know, best day of school is summer, first day of summer, right? You want to see that progress be built, and you don't want too many questions because that's just overwhelming. You need a realistic goal, and I know you have 600 questions. I know you're building out more, but you don't want to overwhelm students. And I think, you know, you've hit a very sweet spot with the number of questions you got.
Right. And when we first met and I started talking, I had a lot more questions than what we ended up using. And I hadn't thought of it that way. And I was glad when you said that, because I did narrow them down to, I think, a more manageable amount that sufficiently covers all the material. And for each concept, it's not covered by just one question. There's multiple questions asked in different way for the same concept. So it will test you in a different way, so you're not just memorizing the information is the point of that. So hopefully it works. One area that I'm developing right now, I've had a lot of people comment to me that they have trouble with the religious rites, the terminology in the religious rites. So I've developed a whole new section that we're adding on religious rites that we'll be uploading the questions for probably within a week or so of this episode dropping. So that'll be really good. Looking forward to that.
Great. And that's what we built our platform to do, is to allow you to keep your questions up to date. So, you know, students don't know this, but you have the ability to update your questions in real time. So Any feedback that you get is corrected immediately for the next student. So this content is fresh. It's up to date. It's what you need to know.
Yeah. And there's no doubt there are some typos, or there may be mistakes or something in the question. If you run across one, let me know. I will definitely fix it. I'm not saying everything's perfect on them by any means. It's just like, I remember giving an exam. I can't remember what class I was teaching. I gave an exam and I started looking at the scores. Now, this was a paper exam. Okay. This was when we were actually in the classroom. And almost everyone in the class made 100 on it. Some didn't. Most everybody did. Well, I had left every answer as an A on the test. I didn't shuffle the answers. So there were a few people that thought it was a trick and didn't get 100, but most everybody got 100 on it. So for any of you out there that remember that, you know who you are. I may have done that more than once.
I think your answer choices are randomized, aren't they?
They are, yes.
Yeah. So if you take one of the MBE wizard questions multiple times, you're not going to just be able to remember, oh, this question was A. You know, it might be B, and the next time you see it, it might be C. So things are shuffled around, again, to force you to recall that information, retrieve it, and then commit.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So tell us a little bit about what you do as a way of emergency medicine. So as funeral directors, and many of the listeners are working in funeral homes now, we go into ERs on a regular basis when people have passed away. Tell us a little bit about what's happened on your side leading up to that, because that's the part we don't get to see often.
Yeah, and that's one of the most human parts of emergency medicine. It's not a daily thing. Well, at least we hope not. Every emergency physician probably has deaths every week or month. And every circumstance is different.
Sure.
And nothing ever seems to be the same. And so things can be as simple as a hospice patient who was the family called and then they died in the ambulance on the way in. That's kind of the easiest thing because family's expecting it. They arrive. There's nothing I'm going to do. The death already happened. But then there's other cases where somebody's critically sick and you're with that family and updating them for hours. And then they ultimately end up dying. And you've built that relationship with that family first. and then it's different. And sure. so there's nothing that we do to really prepare for it, but it's one of the most challenging parts of our job. And when I was actually thinking about funeral services, when you contacted me, I'd never thought of this, but our professions are definitely connected on a family's Absolutely. Grief journey from finding out somebody died until, you know, you guys are doing the funeral services and really helping guide that family to honor that life and begin the healing process.
For sure. For sure. And I think a lot of what y'all do is a lot harder than what we do in the way during that time when that family's holding on to hope. And I'm sure you're holding on to hope too, when you're mm-hmm. trying to save them. And that's got to be hard when you may have that hope and you're optimistic and it doesn't end up working. That's going to be hard to deal with for you and your staff and obviously the family for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And where I work, we're fortunate to have chaplain service 24/7. We do have a morgue in our hospital, so patients are taken there pretty quickly. So we don't actually see funeral service directors, as you know, other hospitals might. But I think one area of my job that I feel inadequate is helping families cope. Because our time is so limited, we don't have time to just sit down and spend time with family to help honor that loved one who passed. We are more having to share information. And so we're pretty much trained to, you know, sit down, look a family in the eye, try to understand what they knew before a family member got there, to be compassionate. My strategy when I sit down with anybody, and again, this is the worst conversation we have, and I dread it every time, is to just look them in the eye and update them and then let them know that their loved one has passed. And the type of reaction you get is widely different based on the Sure. circumstances of the death. And, you know, we see a lot more grief in the form of shock. And people have a hard time coping with their grief in that acute phase. And so, you know, when we started connecting, it made me have just tremendous respect and gratitude. And I also felt reassured that there are folks out there in your specialty with funeral directors and services that help guide these families through the longer grief journey, because that's where we feel inadequate and we don't have the time to do it.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for all that you do. It's, like I said, you've gone through a tough part before we get there. And, but there are across this country, there are tremendous funeral service professionals that help families every day. And those families, like you were talking about, that it's sudden and unexpected. Those can be the most difficult and emotional to try to help through those times. So we have to be prepared as funeral service professionals for those times. And a lot of the stuff that is covered on the MBE that we learn in mortuary school, we may think, you know, we're never going to need to know this. We passed the exam and we can forget about this. And you may never need to know it for the next 20 years, but then something comes across that it will come up and you can recall back to that memory and think, you know, I do remember something about that. Maybe I don't remember it, but enough I can go look it up. Mm-hmm. And that's why this education is so important. I'm sure as a physician, you probably run across things that you don't deal with every day, but you learned at some point enough that you can recognize it now, right? Different conditions and such.
That's why they call it a practice.
Yeah.
You see exactly things, right. And then you think back, oh, you know, 5,000 patients ago, I had something similar and this is what it was. And you start recognizing patterns. And that's where the longer you practice, there's a sweet spot in your terms of your recent education and your number of patients you've seen to recall things.
Sure. And then you also run across people at parties that say, hey, Doug, let me get you to look at this on my arm right here. What do you think this is? Does that happen on a regular basis?
It's always on the butt, though.
in the middle of the party.
Yeah. It's funny. I popped a kid's paranickia on his toe at a party a few weeks ago. The family just came up to me and said, "Hey, what do you think this is?" I was like, "Oh, that's an abscess on, you know, on the side of his toe." And we just took care of it there in a bedroom.
That's awesome. I was at a wedding a few years ago and I recognized a guy and I started thinking, I thought, yeah, he stitched up my hand when I cut it a few years ago. So it was a mutual friend's wedding. So I told him, I said, "Hey, you want to see what the scar was like after a few years?" And it turned out really good, but it was kind of funny, but he had stitched it up. Well, this is all so amazing. I love going through all this. I hope everyone understands there is science behind what we're doing here. And it does work. A big part of that science and what I'm trying to use this podcast for is the positivity part of it, just staying positive and knowing that there is hope. Would you say that that's an important part of preparing for exams, being prepared and staying positive and remaining positive?
Oh, definitely. I'm a very positive person at baseline, but having to retake a standardized exam did get me down. Going back to our platform, we show your score two different ways. One is your cumulative performance. So if you take a question three times, it's going to be scored all three times. And then we also show you your current score. So what your students are going to find is that question bank learning is actually encouraging, because as they're taking more questions, as they're learning concepts, as they're recognizing patterns, they are going to start scoring better. And their current score, again, your most recent attempt at each question, is actually going to start looking much higher than your cumulative score. So I believe, you know, positivity is a mindset that you can control, but it's also on the circumstances around you. And I think if you put yourself in the right position with your studying habits and your resources, it's going to come naturally.
Sure. And would you say it's important to build a support network for yourself and to talk to others, or at least know there's others that are going through the same thing you are?
Definitely. I actually just had a student email me. She's a fellow for immunology and allergy, and we have another question bank in that realm. And she was telling me that there's a few people taking the question bank together. And what they would do is they would all take similar topics, and then they would kind of review which questions tricked them or things they still don't understand. And they formed their own study group surrounded by question bank learning. And she said it was very, very effective and encouraging.
That's great. And I would love to build something like that here. And if anyone has interest on it, please reach out. We could have some, you know, closed Facebook groups or different things like that, where even though you don't know the person on the other side of the country, y'all can still, you know, interact with one another to try to help. I think that'd be great. So if you have interest in that, reach out to me, please. We may even get Doug in there to teach an anatomy section or something. Yeah. Focusing on the circulatory system. So, hey, we all on the show, we always cover a key concept of the day. And of course, I know you're not a funeral service professional, so I found one that would be important to what you do. And our key concept we're going to cover today is explain the difference between medical reason of death and manner classifying the context. So the cause of death versus the manner of death, is that two different things?
Yes, it is. And we typically have to put that in on a death certificate if that's something that falls upon us. And so the cause of death explains the medical reason for the death. Cardiac arrest, respiratory arrest, all the medical conditions that can lead to someone's, you know, deterioration and death. Versus the manner, which is usually more like a natural cause or an accidental cause, homicide, suicide. And so understanding the difference between the cause and manner of death is essential for when we actually accurately fill out a death certificate.
Yeah. And it's important to explain that to the family too, because a lot of times they're going to see the death certificate for the first time when you as a funeral director give it to them, probably after the funeral or after the cremation, when you're actually giving them those certified copies. And the physician that certified it, or the medical examiner or the coroner or the justice of the peace or whoever certified it is not going to be there to explain the difference. So that's where you'll come in and being able to explain, well, here's the cause of death, but look here, it was natural, or it was accident, or it was suicide. That's one that I feel like has to be explained a lot, because sometimes there's not clear between accidental and suicide, maybe when it comes to like drug overdose and things like that. So as a funeral service professional, we have to explain the difference between those two. And you always refer them to the physician or to if they have specific questions, but sometimes it can help just to give context to those two different aspects for sure. Or just tell them, run up to the ER and just find them in the hallway and ask him the question.
That's right. No, I mean, emergency, you know, physicians, we're very approachable. We get EMS that ask us questions all the time. I've had a chaplain come up to me, so we're no better than anybody else. We might have a little more education, but we're people too, and we care.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Doug, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for all that you do. Are there new developments that you have in the work or anything coming out that you want to talk about?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're always trying to build this to be a bigger and better platform. And so you might find you log in on a Friday and you have a great experience. And then Monday, it's going to be an even better experience. So we have a full developmental roadmap where we're building out new features. Cody and MBE Wizard will get every update that we put out on our platform. And just like if you have any content feedback for MBE Wizard, if you have any platform feedback for me, feel free to reach out through our contact us form or email me at doug@qbank.com. And we're always receptive to feedback.
Yeah, absolutely. Same here, for sure. Well, Doug, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for all that you contributed to this. And again, thanks for all you do on wearing both your hats from the medical side and from the QBank side. It's all very important, and we appreciate it very much.
Well, of course. It was fun chatting with you.
Hey, everybody, thank you for dropping by the prep room again. We have more exciting guests, or another exciting guest coming next week that you will not want to miss, and you'll probably recognize the name. And just remember, keep moving forward. Let me know if I can help you out anyway. Thanks for stopping by the prep room. Be sure to subscribe, rate the show, and share with your colleagues in funeral service. The views and opinions expressed by our guest are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of MBE Wizard, the prep room, show host, or producers. The content of this podcast is intended for educational and informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, medical, or exam-specific advice. MBE Wizard and the prep room are not affiliated with or endorsed by the International Conference of Funeral Service Examining Boards, the National Board Exam, or the American Board of Funeral Service Education. We do not share, solicit, or discuss actual exam content. All strategies and insights are designed to support ethical, independent preparation. For official guidance, always consult your academic program and/or state licensing board. Special thanks to Valenti for all the music used in this episode and every episode. Thanks, brother. If you're a funeral service professional, educator, or student with a story, insight, or strategy to share, we'd love to hear from you. Reach out to us at info@mbewizard.com. For more tips, tools, and test prep, follow MBE Wizard on social and visit mbewizard.com. We'll see you next week. Until then, stay focused, stay strategic, stay MBE ready. Stuff your face and feed your purse. Your children just keep getting worse. Why aren't you learning? Oh, my love. Like a
a healing tired of being lame. Hear what I'm saying. Give thanks for every single day you wake. Know that you're living this side of the grave. Try to make a friend, try to smile and wave. And when you got the blues, just say, yeah. My love.